Time, driven by Briggs Auto Lane and BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Here we go!
Hello and welcome to the game. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. Today on the show, you'll hear from Jordan Floyd, who was drafted in the 10th round by the Kansas City Royals. That interview at 5:25. We may have to have a real talk about the Kansas City Royals based on what they have been doing lately. We'll do that here in the open. At 4:40 today, special treat, especially if you are a fan of The Office. One of the better things that I have seen on the internet lately. As always, you can't be serious to end the show. 537-1350, toll free 866-776-1350. If you want to call the show today, you can also find us on Twitter at the Game KMAN. And in some exciting news, spent the good part of yesterday's afternoon with no show working on making sure that we have the podcast of the show now in the iTunes like podcast store, podcast app, whatever you want to call it. So if you search the Game KMAN there, you should now be able to get the podcast of the show. They had been kicking something into it, something there, like one segment randomly a day. Switched it up, changed it up. You'll be able to get it as hour one, hour two, moving forward. So I'm very excited about that. If you do still go the website route, newsradiokman.com, the on-demand tab, we'll have a better player for you there as well. So good news for those of you that do not listen to the show live and rely on the podcast, which I can relate to because I listen to a ton of podcasts. That's how I listen to almost everything. So I am excited about that. We also have, I hope we'll get a chance to use it, but we have a new sounder, new little intro to debut for you today as well. But before we get going here, the Royals have now won four straight. They are within two games of the Indians, four games of first place. They're four games under 500 for the first time since like mid to late April. So things are going well. You could say things are going well for the Royals after beating up on former ace Johnny Cueto yesterday. And I think this is a good time to go ahead and remind everybody that as we get set to have this conversation about are the Royals legitimately back in this race, especially legitimately back in to not be sellers at the trade deadline, it's a great chance to just remind everybody of how on board I have been and how much faith I have continued to have in the Kansas City Royals throughout the last few weeks, that I knew this was coming. I knew this discussion would be coming. It doesn't make sense that this will be a playoff team. They're not good enough. They're without Danny Duffy. Right now, it's just I can't legitimately with my head trust it. I mean, I'll still watch. I'll still remain interested here for a little while. But the best thing I can say right now is that this is better than them being like three, four games under 500 for most of the year. At least this is a sign that they're going to be bottoming out. I would argue that the Royals' playoff chances were probably already done. And if you've listened to the show for a while, you know that's how I've felt for weeks now about this team. But this does appear like it's going to hasten the demise. So, like I said, I've been here the whole time, Royals. I don't know why I would have ever doubted you throughout this whole thing. This is your stage, my friend, because sarcastically I make fun of myself there. I've not had much faith. And you actually, this is maybe like the third time you've come to me with this type of a discussion. And finally this time I was like, well, I really can't stand in the way of this anymore because this is becoming a legitimate discussion. Not only are they doing this and winning games, but they're doing it with Danny Duffy still out. And by the way, they got some good news on that, that he may be back a little bit sooner than expected.
And, I mean, don't mistake it as me saying, I told you so, the Royals are totally making the playoffs. We're winning it all in 2017, rah, rah, rah. I still don't think they will make the playoffs. But you can't – it's just not fair to the team right now to continue to have conversations about, well, who do we hope that they trade away? Who do we hope to get in return? What's our goal for 2018, 2019? Because the fact of the matter is, over their last 34 games, which is a pretty, you know, pretty large sample size, you're talking about, you know, 5 to 6 weeks there, they are 20-14 over those 34 games. And if they were to continue that pace through the rest of the season, you're looking at a regular season of 88-74, which gets you into the playoffs with the Central looking as it is right now. They're 2.5 games behind the Indians because the Indians played earlier this afternoon and won. But if you're in that mix, and like you mentioned, doing this without Danny Duffy, they're also going to get Nate Karns back sometime relatively soon. I think you've got to just hold out some hope here, and they've got 40 games left now before the trade deadline. 40 games for us to see exactly where they fall, but they're playing good baseball, and they seem to be figuring some things out.
That's probably the more relevant discussion than are they going to be a playoff team in the playoff race, because the trade deadline does come up before that, and that'll help determine what's going to happen the rest of the year. I'm glad you put the caveat that you're not trying to necessarily go out there and say that, hey, the Royals are going to win the division now. But here's the way that I would characterize it. Before, when you would try and bring up something like this, when the Royals went through a nice spurt, got somewhat back into it, they got out of last place like a week ago, whatever it was. In those instances, I would be incredibly dismissive of even having this conversation. Like, most of the time, I did not want to have this conversation on the air because it's like, what's the point? I think that's trying to be too way up in the sky with your hopes of a discussion to actually have. Now, just looking at the numbers, I mean, I tend to really like the numbers, rely on the numbers. The numbers are telling me right now that this is a legitimate discussion. If they are just two games back of the Indians, who we really project out to be the division winners, even though the Twins are leading the division right now. And frankly, it's using one of my favorite talking points, the way that I will spin something against myself right now for being so dismissive for a while about the Royals, because what they've done here, and I think one of the common pushbacks you would get right now talking about the Royals being back into it is, yeah, well, they beat up on bad teams here. San Diego's awful. The Giants are pretty bad. They're about to go play the Angels. I hate using schedule as any argument one way or the other, really, in baseball. It's like the one sport where you really can't, just because the game is so based on chance and luck, with some skill mixed in there certainly too, but the ratio of luck to skill is skewed so much differently in baseball that, you know, you just can't predict it from one day to the next nearly as well. So I just don't like every – I always tell it to you when you're trying to sell me on something with the Royals. I'm like, don't give me any schedule argument. Here, I'm going to say don't give me any schedule argument about what they're really doing here. And even if you were going to do that, you do feel that way, I would point this out too. To be a good team, to be a playoff team, you generally beat up on bad teams. And you play so many of the sub-500 batch of baseball teams throughout the year on your schedule, you just take care of those teams, you're going to put yourself in contention for a playoff spot. Royals just nailed the Twins all year last year, and that's how they stayed in the race, because they were just beating up on the bad team in their division.
Well, and it's not just about what they've been able to do in terms of wins and losses over the last month or so, but they are starting to see some tangible improvement from the bottom of their lineup. They finally admitted having Alcides Escobar at the top of the lineup was not the answer, and he's starting to hit a little bit better. He had another three hits yesterday. I believe he's hitting about .230 over the last 2 weeks or something like that, which is a pretty small sample size and not a ton of success. Hitting .230 isn't doing a whole lot, but it's a heck of a lot better than .170, which is where he was at. And when you're putting him at ninth in the lineup instead of first, that's a little bit more acceptable. Plus, you have Alex Gordon that's turned things around a little bit of late. He's batting about .250, .240, .250 over the last month. Again, not great, but when you're batting him seventh or eighth in the lineup instead of second or third, that's more acceptable. And they're hitting a ton of home runs right now, which is not something we usually see out of them, but they are on pace to break the franchise record for home runs in a season by 20. Like, it's not even close. So you have that to look forward to as well, even if you don't think the team's going to make the playoffs. Moustakas is on pace to break Balboni's record. He's on pace for like 45 right now. There's reasons to still tune in and watch this team.
Well, they've definitely given you much more reason to watch here lately. They've done it for me. I was checked out there for a while. Admittedly, after the long losing streak, it was like a 9-game losing streak that it got up to there. After that, I checked out for a while. I'm back in, watching Moose hit it into the drink at, God, I want to call it Pac Bell all the time.
AT&T.
Whatever, I'm still rolling with it. Pac Bell, hitting it out into the water at Pac Bell. That's fun to watch. Jason Hamill's been pitching lights out here. I mean, Jason Vargas continues to be one of the best pitchers in the American League. Like, there are plenty of reasons to watch. I will, however, give you pushback on one thing. This could be setting up for the ultimate worst-case scenario for the season.
Yes, it could.
Which is staying in it too close that you can't deal anybody and then fading down the stretch, and all of a sudden you have nothing to show for the free agent class.
And let's face it, if the Indians ever start playing up to their true potential, I don't think that the Royals are a good enough team right now. I don't think they're a good enough roster to stay in it. I think that part of the formula to win the division this year is the Indians continuing to stagger between like average and good, like for the rest of the year, and just have the Royals find a way to clip them in the last couple of weeks. That's part of this, and it doesn't feel great to have part of it taken out of your hands like that. But that's the formula. That's the way the Royals are going to do it if they're going to do it this year.
Well, it comes back to another head versus heart conversation here with the Royals. If you're using your head, it would be much better for a team that does not have all that great of a farm system right now to be in a position to make deals, help bolster that farm system. It's going to get you winning at a better clip quicker, theoretically, assuming that you do the trades correctly and get some talent that actually makes it up to the major leagues. But outside of a scenario where you're, let's see, who is the worst team in the NBA? Like the Sixers, or you're the Cleveland Browns, and there is a quarterback that you want to take. If you're already that bad and you want to support the tanking thing, the theory of tank to go, you know, suck for luck, whatever it's going to be, I can get on board with that if your team's already that bad. But I can't really tell you that when the Royals are at least still a team that's hovering around 500 and we're still not that far removed from just years and years and years of bad baseball, I'm not going to legitimately sit here and tell you on the mic, well, you should just hope that they tank. No, I think you should still enjoy this for what it is, still enjoy having competitive baseball.
Let's fast forward the clock here. Let's say that 2 weeks to go until the trade deadline, they're still in this position. They're 2.5 back of Cleveland, and they're 4 games under 500. Are you buying or are you selling? Because I know, like you said, that you're not going to stay put in that case.
How many back are they again?
2.5 of Cleveland, 4 games under 500.
Oh, I don't think you can sell. If you're only 2.5 back in the division, I don't think there's any way you can sell.
That is assuming, and we continue to say this, well, it's assuming that the Twins will fall back at some point in time. Maybe they won't. Maybe they really will carry this, but I'm still looking at Cleveland as the team that you got to beat.
Yeah, I don't think you can sell if for nothing else other than, I mean, the public backlash from that would be pretty strong.
Yeah.
I would think. I could be wrong there, but I would think. Tyler's going to have you in hour two of the show. He'll play back my interview with Jordan Floyd at 5:25, who is now a member of the Royals organization, speaking to KC. Real fun segment coming up at 4:40, especially if you're a fan of the TV show The Office and Big 12 football. But coming up next, one of my least favorite college sports topics is back in the news. You're listening to The Game. I gotta let this roll.
Johnny Cueto, welcome to Kansas City.
Remember when we would listen to this like every day? Wouldn't let it go.
Won't you help us win the world?
Brings back great memories.
I remember when this was the kind of thing that angered me about the show and we didn't have to worry about Gavin Schefter.
Yeah, Brady wasn't award-winning at that point in time. This is the Johnny Cueto song. Royals beat up on Johnny Cueto yesterday. By the way, this is The Game. We're back here on the show. Jordan Floyd on the show at 5:25. Fun segment coming up with The Office and Big 12 football at 4:40. Did you take any extra satisfaction from the fact that the Royals really beat up Johnny Cueto?
No, none at all. And it seemed like some Royals fans did, which I thought was weird. He didn't like totally sparkle in Kansas City the way that he was expected to, but they won the World Series.
I see. I would even disagree with that. He threw two incredible games in the playoffs.
Yeah, but before that, I mean, yes, he was great in the playoffs when it mattered.
Well,
but,
right, but what was he brought in to do? What was the objective for Johnny Cueto? I almost started singing the song. The objective for Johnny Cueto was to come in, win big playoff games. He did that, including in the World Series. Hey, mission accomplished, man.
Yeah, I don't know why people would hold that against him or get any special satisfaction after seeing the Royals tee off on him yesterday.
Yeah, to me, that's just ludicrous. Like, I have nothing but good memories about Johnny Cueto. I am conscious of the fact that he went through a stretch there in the regular season that had us all pulling our hair out and freaking out, really nervous because, is this guy going to show up in the playoffs? Like, he was really bad there for a while. I gloss over that now in my memories.
But
that's not what I remember at all. I remember the beginning. and how excited I was and how awesome it was watching him those first couple games when he still was fine. He was pretty good, and he was just so fun, and everything was incredible. That was honestly, I would make the argument that that was the most fun, if you're just talking pure fun, the most fun I had watching the Royals in 2015 was that stretch when they first acquired Johnny Cueto. I remember him pitching in Toronto because there was no real strings attached to the whole thing. Obviously, I like watching the World Series start, you know, better if you're talking about an overall thing just because of the stakes of the game. But you're so nervous. You know, there's so much. The stakes are so high there that the nervousness that you feel takes away from some of the fun in the moment. Those first starts for Cueto, it was just pure fun. All you got to do is kick back your legs. Doesn't matter if he loses. The Royals are still in first place. They're dominating the division. Those are some of the absolute best memories of the Royals I have. And then obviously at the end with the World Series memories of Cueto, they were great. All that washes everything out. I wish nothing but success for that guy.
Royals fans were all about Ben Zobrist in the World Series last year when he won the MVP with the Cubs. Why would this be that much different? I mean, I understand that Zobrist was more consistent when he was with Kansas City than Johnny Cueto was, but I don't understand how Zobrist could be like a good guy and Cueto could be a bad guy in the eyes of Royals fans. They both got rings with KC. That's as far as it needs to go.
Well, this won't surprise you at all. Most people, I think, would be that way. They have more fond memories of Zobrist. They would think of Zobrist first. Not me, man. I mean, Zobrist was great. I love Ben Zobrist. But you know that Johnny Cueto is more of a guy that I'm going to gravitate towards. The flair, the fun, all that stuff with Cueto was just awesome. Plus, the starting pitcher, I mean, you have more of an impact on the games that you are in. So, to me, that made him more fun, and I've got better memories from him. It almost made me feel bad. I mean, ultimately, I didn't because I wanted the Royals to win, and it's fun watching them play the way they are now. But I don't really want it to come at the expense of Johnny Cueto. We always hear, I remember Frank Martin and Bill Snyder being real staunch about talking. Like, I do not like coaching against my friends and former colleagues, like guys that have coached under me. It's the same way here with what watching Johnny Cueto get beat up by the Royals was.
The only argument is that Cueto plays for the Giants and you can still feel some bad blood toward them. Maybe some of this from Royals fans comes from the fact that they have this idea that Cueto joined the enemy or something like that by signing with the Giants instead of going somewhere else, but there's not a lot there.
Yeah, that's a stretch. To me, you're looking for reasons to dislike the guy if you're going to go with that, because yeah. I was going to make that point, too, at the end. You know, it's not like this is a situation where you could be upset with the guy for leaving afterwards. We all knew the situation. He was a rental player, and I held firm at the time and stand by this opinion with how shaky he was for a stretch there in the regular season. I didn't want the Royals to dump a bunch of money into him long term, so it didn't matter that he went somewhere else.
He's got an ERA of like 4.6 or something this year. It's not like he's really tearing it up with his new home either. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, if nothing else, he gifted us that incredible song that we just heard there.
That may be the last time we ever hear it on these airways.
Very well might. So thank you very much, Johnny Cueto. The Louisville sanctions have been handed out. The men's basketball program, they had more or less like a prostitution ring going on for recruits.
Yeah, pretty much.
I should probably be more careful with that statement, but they were in some ways soliciting some sexual activity between recruits and select females.
One in particular was paid $10,000 for over a four-year stretch, putting on performances and engaging in sexual acts with recruits. That's basically it.
Boy, crazy coming from that straight arrow Rick Pitino. but the sanctions have been handed out now, mm-hmm. And a part of this is one of my least favorite things in college sports. One of my least favorite things to debate, but since it's relevant and topical, I will do it. Go ahead and give me the whole list here.
Well, this is assuming that their appeal fails, but they are going to have to vacate all of the wins that took place when they were using players that were deemed to be ineligible over a four-year period of time, and that would include their national championship in 2013. So it is likely that they are going to be stripped of their national championship, which would be the first time that that's happened in men's basketball history. We'll have to take that banner down. Also, 4 years of suspension, a bunch of fines that are dished out as well. They're going to have to give back the money that they got from the ACC distribution from the NCAA tournaments during those years, and a 5-game suspension for Rick Pitino, only for ACC games, but a 5-game suspension for next season. So I believe I covered it. I think a little bit of a scholarship reduction, too.
Well, the part that I don't like about it, because I hate when it's divvied out as a punishment, because I don't really think of it as much of a punishment, but the retroactive stripping of titles, you can't take away the real substantive part of winning a national championship here in Louisville's case, or in other cases, vacating wins, you know, whatever it is. But here, especially when it's something big and it's a national championship, the substantive part is not being able to see your name in, you know, the NCAA Wikipedia page that lists every national champion, or going to the official NCAA website and seeing that it's there, or a media guide and seeing that the national championship page or records are there. The substantive part of that is going through the run, the NCAA tournament run, getting to the Final Four, playing those games, getting to watch your team on the big stage, the satisfaction in the moment of having it happen, the DVD that comes with it, the T-shirt that comes with it, which, by the way, you're not going to take away from anybody. You got to experience the ride and the fun. That's what it's all about. It is not about just being able to see it on a sheet of paper or see a banner hanging up in the arena, in particular if you're a tradition-rich program like Louisville.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second and put that attitude of yours to the test, though. So I want you to indulge me for a second.
Oh, I got attitude.
Let's say that 1998 K-State wins against Texas A&M. They go on and they win the national championship. And
did that not happen?
Let's say that that today it was announced that K-State that Michael Bishop had been paid, and the NCAA was officially stripping K-State of its national championship in 1998, making the program have zero national championships again. Are you saying that there would not be any significant emotional tie to that announcement for you if that took place?
Not really. No.
Really?
No, because I still got the T-shirt. I mean, I got a T-shirt right now that a buddy of mine and I made as a joke that says 1998 National Champs. Like, I already got that. I would have the memories. I mean, that's what it was all about, and it would still, you know, if you're talking about, like, I mean, maybe it harms Bill Snyder's legacy a touch. But so much after the fact, like, it's just been formed and embedded in people's minds that happened, and you won, and it's still there.
Of course,
I'm not going to go back and think about the 2012-13 NCAA season and be like, oh, yes, the Michigan National Championship year, of course. No, it wouldn't do it for me. I would have still gotten all the satisfaction out of what happened.
There would have been a huge flag waving at Bill Snyder Family Stadium for the last, you know, 20 years now that says 1998 National Champs. You go to the Bill this fall, that flag is no longer there.
How often am I looking at flags, man? I mean,
okay.
It's cool that the World Series Champs flag flies over the K. I haven't looked at it since probably the first time that I went back to the K after the Royals had won the World Series. I mean, that stuff doesn't matter all that much.
I'm not saying that it factually should. Like, I factually disagree with you. I'm just trying to get your viewpoint, because I'm very different. That would bother me a ton. That's something that would really cut deep for me and what I would consider to be a significant punishment. But we're just wired differently in that regard.
Because even to me, the other part of the punishment here, one other part of it for Pitino, having him suspended 5 ACC games, if I knew going into it, and I'm Rick Pitino, now, with this is different than, like, just impermissible benefits. There was obviously worse stuff going on here in the eyes of the law, and morality is going to come into play, all that. But for the sake of discussion, just let's think about it's just impermissible benefits, which really is what this is with a lot of other stuff on it. If you knew going in that the impermissible benefits would allow you to win a national championship and then 4 or 5 years later, they're going to strip it and you're going to get a 5-game suspension, even in ACC play, yeah, let me take that. I'm going to take that and run. I'd rather have the national championship and the national championship run. I guess, you know, my point here is if you really want to punish them, and they do hand out some other things there too, but just hit them hard in the future moving forward. That's how you punish. And it's not a perfect system, and I don't like being the guy. like I'm kind of getting into territory that makes me uncomfortable because I don't like being the guy saying this is what the punishment should be because there's never a perfect punishment. If you do hand down a bunch of restrictions, you're going to be hurting some kids that had nothing to do with all of this. So I caution you on that, but I don't think that the way to go is retroactive stripping of wins and all that. Let's go to the phone lines here, 537-1350, 866-776-1350. Larry from Manhattan. What's going on, Larry?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's all about scholarships. That's how you punish a team. And, you know, all that other stuff is incidental, and I don't think it matters much to a player coming in. You know, you got to – if things are as bad as what they said happened, then it all needs to be on scholarship, you know, and Patino needs to pay for that. You know, he's – 5-game suspension, it'll be over next year, you know, over, and when it's over, they're on down the road. None of those teams, though, I don't think that, you know, Louisville, they'll get another national championship. They've had, how many have they had already? You know, so it doesn't mean much to them. None of that means much. It's all about suspensions in the future if you really want to punish a team.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Larry, and I appreciate the phone call. And even just thinking out loud here, I mean, if you want to deter Patino from doing something like this, 5-game suspension, suspend him for a year. Tell him he can't coach for a year. That might actually make you think about what you're going to do. Now we're starting to talk when you're weighing out the stakes, national championship, not coaching for a year, especially for an established guy like Patino that's won big before.
I think how severe you view the stripping of a championship probably depends on if your program has won a lot of them or hasn't. I think that if it happens for like K-State's football program, it would mean a lot more than for Louisville basketball. But that's just me.
God, this whole thing, I hate it so much that it's turned me into the guy who wants to be judge and jury doling out punishment, which I hate. I hate. Makes me want to throw up that I'm sitting here doing that. Jordan Floyd on the show at 5:25. When we come back, if you're a fan of the greatest TV series ever, The Office, stick around here on The Game. Back here on The Game, we are going to talk about The Office here today because of something fantastic that I saw on the internet yesterday. Sometimes the internet can use its powers for very, very, very good. Big 12 teams, Big 12 football teams as characters from The Office. I think you'll find, even if you don't know The Office, which if you don't, acquaint yourself very quickly. Even if you don't, I think you'll still find some of the traits that make these teams what they are very entertaining. First, though, I do have to say we have something to debut today on the show, and it's because I see that Mitch has already retweeted his WTF fact of the day. Did this happen during the show that you retweeted, or was it earlier today?
First segment.
Okay. I thought it was during the show that it did happen, and as we know, this is turned into a thing. Mitch tends to get bored over there on the other side of the glass, especially if it's not Jabroni of the Weekday, and he'll go ahead and retweet stuff from the What the Facts. I keep calling them WTF Facts because I'm scared of accidentally saying the wrong thing if I had to continuously refer to this as its proper name. So, without further ado, we have we've dressed this little bit up for you, Mitch. Let it fly.
Since Mitch is bored with the show, it's time for his WTF Fact of the Day.
And I'm like, WTF is going on around here?
What do we got?
Well, today, I've actually known about this guy for a while. Bill Haste, he was known as the Snake Man. I find this very fascinating. He was bitten, and he still owns the Guinness World Record for most poisonous snake bites at 173, but through his life, he would have his wife inject him daily with snake venom for over 60 years, and he saved countless lives, actually, with his antibody-rich blood. He lived up to be 100.
What number did you say it was? How many bites?
173.
So I'm 172 behind him. I've got 172 to go to tie the record.
That's actually one of the better ones I think you've had.
That is fascinating.
It's pretty fascinating that he lived to be 100 and basically made himself like resistant to the venom and snakes and then saved lives while doing it. That was good.
He basically opened – I looked up some more information on him. He opened up snake farms all over the place.
Oh, now you got that dumb song stuck in my head. Snake farm song? You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
No clue.
Oh, it's some – I think it's like a country song. I don't know. It plays at the bar sometimes. The Office – I think it is my favorite TV show of all time, favorite TV series of all time. It's by far the most rewatchable TV series of all time to me. This is actually an Oklahoma State blog that did this. I will give them some credit, CowboysRideForFree.com. But they did an awesome job comparing all the Big 12 football teams. So think football here. Comparing all the Big 12 football teams to characters from The Office. First of all, this is like the ultimate summer thing. But if you're going to do these dumb summer lists when we're all just craving for football, this is the way to go about it.
Incorporate The Office into it.
Yes, that's a good way to do it. And it's not, you can tell, I mean, this was pretty well thought out. It was not hastily put together. So let me do it this way. I have a couple favorites, but I'm going to run down the whole list just one by one for you first, and then we'll go back and talk about them individually. So in the order that they list them here on the site, of course, they start with Oklahoma State, being an OSU site. They have Oklahoma State as Dwight Schrute. They have Oklahoma as Michael Scott. TCU as Daryl Philbin. Baylor as Toby. Texas Tech is Kelly Kapoor. Texas is Ryan Howard. Iowa State is Jan Levinson. West Virginia, Creed. K-State, Jim. And we'll get to that. I think it was the loosest comparison that's there. And Kansas, Kevin Malone. And the best part of that is that they throw in the clip, if you're a fan of The Office, of when Kevin drops the giant vat of chili all over the floor, which is one of the funniest clips that you could possibly have from there. So, with some analysis here, I really think all of them, honestly, except for K-State and Jim, are pretty darn strong comparisons. I thought it was the loosest comparison to have K-State be Jim. I would have submitted, instead of Jim, going with Pam. But here's what they said. Jim is notorious for doing just enough to stay afloat at Dunder Mifflin. He rarely goes above and beyond, so people don't expect him to do a ton of stuff regularly. K-State doesn't want its fans to demand a ton from the team every season, so the team has stayed under 10 wins every season since 2012. Jim's also notorious for pulling pranks on The Office when people initially get upset. In the end, no one can stay mad at Jim, same as K-State. Are you trying to tell me that you can stay mad at Bill Snyder? I didn't think so. It's like, I guess.
I do like it from this regard. There are times that Bill Snyder gets questions in press conferences, and the expression on his face is very much the Jim looking into the camera.
Right about that.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You are right about that.
When you ask him about injuries and that kind of thing. Yeah.
I would submit to you that K-State should be Pam, Jim's eventual wife in the series, because Pam. And think especially first couple seasons, Pam. They portrayed her to be a very boring, lives a mundane lifestyle.
She was not a very dynamic character.
Yeah, not dynamic at all. And that's kind of what K-State football is if you're an outsider. You're looking at it saying, well, it's not the fun, high-flying offenses of the rest of the Big 12. It's not really a sexy style or brand of football. It's been lately here, the second go-around with Snyder, a lot of walk-ons that have, just gritted their way into the starting lineup. So in that regard, I think it fits Pam. And then the other part is, Pam was still pretty effective at her job and well-respected throughout The Office. She didn't have many enemies. I think K-State, well, people think it's somewhat boring. Well-respected.
I was actually just doing some research on this very topic, what we're talking about. Somebody actually did this back in 2008.
Yeah, I know, but it was awful. It was not good.
Really?
K-State was Kelly Kapoor.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't like that one either.
Huh.
This list is much better. Trust me. Don't read that from 2008. Here's my favorites. My favorite part of the whole thing is them comparing Texas to Ryan Howard, who in the series starts out as a temp low on the totem pole, but winds up more like being their bosses.
Youngest VP in Dunder Mifflin history.
Right, really high up in the company, and then starts getting into these cocaine-fueled parties and thinks that he's like Steve Jobs, way too smart for everybody. So that's the Ryan that they're talking about. Basically always thinking they're more important than they are and then have some impressive screw-ups. One of the big screw-ups for Ryan Howard was this website, Dunder Mifflin Infinity. And my favorite part of the whole thing was they said the Longhorn Network is Dunder Mifflin Infinity.
That is
supposed to be this cool, huge thing launched, and it sucks. And nobody watches and or uses it. I would think you would be very pleased to see that Baylor was Toby, just because everybody hates Toby.
That's the best one,
yes,
in my opinion.
Everybody hates Toby in the show, and Michael rips on him all the time. West Virginia's Creed, pretty solid, just like weird. You're like, what are you doing here? You're the weirdest guy in the office.
But there were a couple of characters that what I didn't like about it was there were a couple of characters that were left out that I feel should have been included. We did not get Oscar. Oscar was not in there. Phyllis was not in there.
You can't fit a square peg in a round hole. Yeah, if they don't match a team, they don't match
them,
a team.
Both of them are more deserving than like Daryl to get in there, I think.
Well, again, this is not about what the characters deserve. This is about proper characterizations of the schools. And for instance, Daryl was TCU, and I like that because it says TCU started from the bottom outside of a Power 5 conference, just like Daryl started in the warehouse. He starts in the warehouse and actually works his way up into being an actual office employee. He never got all the way to the top, which they compare this, even though he tried to be the manager. Never got all the way to the top. TCU got close, didn't really win a Big 12 title, but everybody really respects Daryl. Everyone respects TCU. You don't want to go play them.
I'd also argue with the Toby and Baylor thing. It's only Michael Scott that didn't like Toby. Everyone else was fine with Toby, I thought.
I wouldn't
Did you
say,
watch The
no,
Office?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't say fine. Everyone just ignores him. He's like the...
Yeah, they ignore him, but they don't hate him.
Well, playing off... I mean, Michael's hate is a whole... I mean, that's one of the bigger storylines throughout the entirety of the series. So I would just argue, like, the fact that Michael's hate permeated so many of the episodes, that's what you're going for here, that Toby is hated.
Michael bought him a rock as a present with a sticky note on it that said, suck on this.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody hated him, man. I thought it was great. I retweeted it. JL Kurtz on Twitter if you want to see the entire list. Read all the descriptions. Jordan Floyd on the show at 525. Before I exit here at the end of the first hour, I got to complain, man. Some people are trying to steal a spotlight from me. This is The Game. Back here on The Game, finishing off hour one of the show. I promise we're not going to talk much about this whole deal in the build-up to it. I'm already annoyed at how much run it's gotten today since it's been officially announced. The Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather boxing match apparently is going to actually happen. I will first and foremost say that, well, I think the idea in general is pretty stupid. It's such a novelty that I will watch it. I do think it's just you watch it for the spectacle, but if you're trying to will yourself into believing that this will be an actual fight, if Floyd Mayweather does not want it to be a fight, it will not be a fight. But having said that, my biggest issue here, everyone's missing the point, talking about this fight, breaking it down, whatever. Whatever side you're on, you're missing the point. The point is, can you tell me what date they set this for?
Sometime in August. Some very irrelevant date in August.
It is not irrelevant. They set it for August 26th, which just so happens to be my 28th birthday. So here's the deal. One, I do enjoy the idea of watching that fight. I would rather have it not be on the same day as my birthday. I would rather have two awesome nights separate of each other and not have to worry about them being combined. Two, that is going to steal some of the thunder of my birthday. Like, if I'm trying to get together with some people on one of the years my birthday's actually on a Saturday, God forbid, everybody is going to be geared up trying to watch this fight, and that's going to get in the way of some of it. I'm going to have to work my birthday around the Mayweather-McGregor fight. I don't, like, why do they not consult me on this thing? What fights happen in August? Like, big fights never happen in August.
Not me, man. I'm not interested in the fight, so I'll come to your party if you invite me.
At least
me.
You have something to do now.
We celebrate me. That's what you do on August 26th. You celebrate me and everything that I am and bring to the table. I don't need
You're only a shooter. We've covered this. You can't do anything else. You only shoot.
Well, it's not about my basketball acumen. It's just about me as a person, how awesome I am. It's a celebration of John Kurtz on August 26th. Not a celebration of Mayweather and McGregor fleecing America for nine-figure paydays.
You share a birthday with James Harden and Macaulay Culkin.
And Bomani Jones, as I found out yesterday, because on his show he was complaining about the date.
That is a who's who right there.
Hey, James Harden's pretty good.
Yeah, I was talking about the second guy.
Yeah, I mean, Macaulay Culkin, whatever. I could take or leave that, but I'll take Bomani Jones and James Harden. What I won't take is this fight on my birthday. I'm out of here. Second hour of the show, Jordan Floyd. You'll hear a taped interview with me and him. He is 10th round draft pick of the Royals. I think Tyler's going to talk some Royals when we come back.
When you shop at